on VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, you will hear a report about young Cuban baseball players from Jill Robbins. Brian Lynn presents this week's science report. Finally, Kelly Jean Kelly tells us about the life and presidency of Woodrow Wilson. But first, international scientists warn that the world's largest ice sheet in Antarctica is losing ice much more quickly than they had thought. A recent study by Australian and other researchers described what could happen if targets to limit global temperature increases are not met. Narelli Abram is a professor at the Australian National University's Research School of Earth Sciences. She was a co-writer of a study that recently appeared in the publication Nature. She warned that the melting of the East Antarctic ice sheet could be disastrous. Abram said, by 2500, East Antarctica could contribute up to 5 meters of sea level rise, on top of the sea level rise that we will already have had from Greenland and West Antarctica. The East Antarctic ice sheet holds the majority of the world's glacier ice. It was thought to be less affected by worldwide temperature rises compared to the ice sheet in West Antarctica or Greenland. The study by Abram and other researchers says that if the temperature rise is limited to 2 degrees Celsius, the East Antarctic ice sheet should remain stable. In other words, it should remain generally the same size. But the researchers warn that warmer temperatures could cause more melting and increase worldwide sea level by many meters. Abram said, it gives us even more of a reason to make sure that we are doing everything that we can to not exceed that 2-degree warming level. The Paris Climate Agreement, signed in 2015, aims to limit global warming to under 2 degrees Celsius. Another Antarctic study published in Nature drew from research by scientists at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, or JPL, in California. The scientists found that the edge of the East Antarctic ice sheet has been losing ice faster than natural processes can replace it. The edges of an ice sheet are known as ice shelves. They extend from the ice sheet into the water. They are permanent floating sheets of frozen fresh water. Ice shelves take thousands of years to form. They hold back glaciers that would otherwise easily fall into the ocean and cause sea levels to rise. For the JPL study, the researchers examined over 50,000 kilometers of the Antarctic coastline. They found that the loss of ice from coastal glacier pieces breaking off into the ocean was nearly the same as the loss of ice due to thinning of the continent's large ice shelves. The thinning of the ice is a result of warming ocean water underneath. Taken together, the two processes have reduced the mass of Antarctica's ice shelves by 12 trillion metric tons since 1997. That is double the earlier estimate of 6 trillion metric tons. Antarctica is crumbling at its edges, said JPL scientist Chad Green, a lead writer of the study. Eric Wolfe is a professor at the University of Cambridge in Britain. He said of the JPL study, "If we keep to the 2 degrees of global warming that the Paris Agreement promises, the sea level rise due to the East Antarctic ice sheet should be modest." But, he said, failure to limit global warming and reduce greenhouse gas emissions would risk many meters of sea level rise over the next few centuries.
Eight-year-old Kevin Kindelan and 7-year-old Leonie Benigo play baseball for a Central Havana Junior League team in Cuba. They both have big dreams. Kindelan says he wants to play for Cuba's national baseball club. Benigo says he is aiming higher. "I want to get to the major leagues and be like Yuli Gurriel," he said. Gurriel, who was born in Cuba, plays the first base position for the Houston Astros. The team is part of Major League Baseball in the United States. Baseball is a national pastime in Cuba, just as it is in the United States. It is a sport that many Cubans enjoy and follow. But Cuba's worsening economic situation has led to more baseball players leaving the country and the National League. Cuba's economy shrank 11% in 2020. Cubans must wait in long lines for food, medicine, and fuel. Since October, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency said more than 157,000 Cubans have fled to the U.S. Francis Romero is a Cuban baseball expert and writer who lives in Florida. He said, "In the past 6 years, the number of baseball players who have left Cuba for the U.S. is 3 times higher than the number of players who left between 2000 and 2010. No baseball league could survive that," Romero said. Romero told Reuters that young Cuban baseball players no longer want to prove themselves by winning Olympic medals for the country. The Cuban national teams won gold medals in baseball in Barcelona in 1992, Atlanta in 1996, and Athens in 2004. Players once waited a long time to emigrate to prove themselves, Romero said. Now they leave at 16 or 17 years of age. At the Ponton Ball Field in central Havana, some of Cuba's youngest players are practicing on the muddy infield. Their coach is Aracli Chirino, a former player in Cuba's National League who began his career at Ponton. "Here, we don't have gloves, bats, shoes, or even balls to play with. And when we do, they are too expensive," Chirino said. A lack of supplies has led some baseball players to leave the country or play soccer instead. Soccer is another favorite sport that does not require much equipment. "Let's not fool ourselves. We're losing our best ball players before they even make it to the national series," Chirino said. Coach Nicolas Reyes is 73 years old. More than 10 of his players have left Cuba. "They started with me, and now they're in the U.S. major leagues. It makes me proud," he said. But he recognizes that money and fame have increasingly pulled players away from Cuba. "When I played, it wasn't like that. You would never betray your country," he added. Juan Reynaldo Perez is president of the Cuban Baseball Federation. He said, because of the growing number of promising baseball players, there is still hope for the future of Cuban baseball. We are a country with a baseball tradition, and that continues to grow, he said. Cuba is now centering its efforts on keeping promising ball players from leaving. In May, the Cuban Federation signed a deal with the World Baseball Softball Confederation, WBSC, that permits Cuban players to play professionally in other countries while keeping their nationality. A similar deal, signed with the Major League Baseball, or MLB, in the United States in 2018, would have given Cubans the same right. But the U.S. president at the time, Donald Trump, ended the deal before it became official. That lack of such a deal with the MLB continues to be a major barrier to keeping promising Cuban ball players at home, says Guillermo Carmona. He is the manager of Cuba's well-known Industriales team. Without a doubt, that deal was a great motivation for our players, said Carmona. Now many have left us. I'm Jill Robbins.
Scientists say changes in the voice box of non-human primates over time may have led to human speech. The researchers said they examined the voice box, also known as the larynx, in 43 different species of primates. Their study showed that humans differ from apes and monkeys because humans lack a structure called a vocal membrane. This contains small muscular attachments to the vocal cords. The researchers said humans also lack balloon-like structures called air sacs that may help some apes and monkeys produce loud, deep calls. The air sacs also help the primates avoid hyperventilating, which means to breathe at an unusually fast rate. The scientists said the loss of these tissues resulted in a stable vocal system in humans that was critical to the development or evolution of human speech. Such speech permits humans to express thoughts and feelings using clear and complex sounds, the team said. Humans are primates, as are monkeys and apes. The evolutionary lineage that led to our species, Homo sapiens, split from the one that led to our closest living relatives, chimpanzees, about 6 to 7 million years ago. The researchers say the voice box changes are believed to have happened after that. Takeshi Nishimura is with Kyoto University's Center for the Evolutionary Origins of Human Behavior in Japan. He was a lead writer of the study, which recently appeared in the publication Science. Nishimura said the research suggested that complex vocal structures in non-human primates can make it difficult to effectively control vibrations. Another lead researcher, Tecumseh Fitch of Austria's University of Vienna, added that vocal membranes permit other primates to make louder, higher calls than humans. But they make voice breaks and noisy vocal irregularity more common, he said. The larynx is a tube in the throat that is connected to the top of the windpipe and contains the vocal cords. It is used for talking, breathing, and swallowing. The larynx is the organ of voice, which creates the signal we use to sing and speak, Fitch said. Only living species were included in the study because these soft tissues are not likely to appear in fossils, the remains of ancient life. This means that it is unclear exactly when the changes took place. Fitch said it is possible the simplified development happened in a human ancestor called Australopithecus, which combined ape-like and human-like elements. Scientists believe Australopithecus first appeared in Africa about 3.85 million years ago. The research team said the changes could have happened later in our ancestor grouping, Homo, which first appeared in Africa 2.4 million years ago. Homo sapiens, the primate species human beings belong to, appeared more than 300,000 years ago in Africa. Fitch noted, however, that while the evolutionary simplification of the larynx was important, it did not give us speech by itself. He noted that other body developments also mattered for speech over time, including a change in the position of the larynx. Speech and language are critically related, but not synonymous, said Harold Guzoles. He is a primatologist and psychologist at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. Speech is the audible, sound-based manner of language expression, and humans, alone among the primates, can produce it, he wrote in a related commentary in Science. The researchers noted that the increased complexity of human spoken language came as a result of evolutionary simplification. I think it's pretty interesting that sometimes in evolution, less is more, Fitch said. He added, by losing a trait, you might open the door to some new adaptations. I'm Brian Lynn.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Woodrow Wilson. He served two terms, from 1913 to 1921, and led the United States through the First World War. Wilson might have seemed an unlikely war president. He was a university professor before he entered politics. And when the conflict began in Europe in 1914, Wilson strongly rejected the idea of the U.S. getting involved. He even campaigned for his second term on the slogan, "He kept us out of the war." But Wilson's idealism eventually made him believe the U.S. must enter the conflict. He famously said, "The world must be safe for democracy." He spent the last months of his presidency fighting to create a League of Nations
that would prevent future wars. Wilson did not succeed in that effort, but the effects of his presidency are still seen today in both the domestic and foreign affairs of the United States. Woodrow Wilson was born in the state of Virginia in 1856 and grew up in the South. Wilson's father was a Protestant Christian minister who supported the views of the Confederacy during the Civil War. Wilson's mother had been born in England, but raised in the United States. She was reportedly warm and loving, especially to her husband and four children. Wilson's early life was marked by poor health and a passion for learning. His education included tutoring by Confederate soldiers, classes with his father, a year at Davidson College, a bachelor's degree from the school now called Princeton, 1 year of law school, and a doctoral degree in history and political science from the University of Johns Hopkins. He remains, so far, the only president with a Ph.D. Wilson's academic interests were in government and how it could be most effective. Even as a young man, he supported the idea of a strong executive, either a prime minister or a president. He wrote a number of books, including a biography of George Washington and a history of the United States. He also taught popular classes at several colleges, including Bryn Mawr in Pennsylvania, Wesleyan in Connecticut, and Princeton in New Jersey. In time, Wilson became the president of Princeton. He made major reforms to the school until some faculty and alumni resisted his efforts. Wilson had always been interested in political power. The Democratic Party in New Jersey became interested in Wilson when they were looking for a candidate with an honest public image. In truth, party officials believed he would be a weak leader whom they could influence. Wilson surprised them by winning the seat as New Jersey governor easily and then rejecting their efforts to control him. He went on to pass major reform legislation in New Jersey that reduced corruption and protected the rights of workers. His actions drew the attention of Democratic Party leaders seeking a candidate for president in 1912. Voters did not overwhelmingly choose Wilson in 1912. Although he did well in the Electoral College, he earned only a little more than 40% of the popular vote. Other votes were mostly divided between two former presidents, Theodore Roosevelt and William Taft. Yet, Wilson quickly asserted authority over Congress and pushed through a number of laws aimed at dramatic reform. Historian Kendrick Clements at the University of South Carolina says, Wilson had a strongly progressive vision. He was interested in expanding economic opportunity for people at the bottom of society and eliminating special privileges enjoyed by the richest and most powerful members of society. One of Wilson's most important acts was to create a new federal agency called the Federal Reserve Board. It still regulates American banks, credit, and money supply. He also created the Federal Trade Commission to ensure fair business practices and the Department of Labor to protect workers' rights. And he supported laws to reduce working hours for railroad employees, bar child labor, and offer government loans to farmers. But even during Wilson's busy lawmaking, the threat of world war demanded his attention. Wilson had declared that the U.S. would remain neutral in the growing conflict between the Allied and Central Powers. One of his reasons was that people in the U.S. were immigrants from the countries that were at war. Wilson did not want the conflict to divide Americans. However, he permitted international trade, including with Britain and France. As a result, many believed the U.S. was favoring those countries. In 1915, a German submarine sank a British ship called the Lusitania and killed more than 100 Americans on board. Wilson protested several times to Germany about the sinking. He warned that the U.S. would not accept another such aggression. But 2 years later, Germany attacked U.S. commercial ships. It also invited Mexico to enter into an alliance against the United States. At the beginning of Wilson's second term in office, he asked Congress to declare war on Germany. The U.S. entered World War I on the side of the Allied powers. The additional support came at an important time. American soldiers were able to help resist German troops in France. In time, Germany asked for an armistice, an agreement to stop fighting. Following the war, Wilson had a grand vision for how to gain lasting peace in Europe. He proposed that the countries that had won the war not punish Germany. Wilson also wanted European colonies to rule themselves and other areas be given immediate independence. Most importantly, Wilson suggested a League of Nations that would guarantee the member countries independence and safety. But few world leaders agreed with his plan completely. Even in the U.S., many Republican lawmakers in Congress resisted Wilson's idea for a League of Nations. Some strongly objected to any treaty that would limit the country's independence. Others did not want the country to be involved in world issues at all. So Wilson began a trip across the U.S. to raise public support for the League of Nations. He traveled more than 15,000 kilometers in 22 days and gave 29 speeches. Wilson's doctors warned him that the trip was hard on his health. But Wilson was firm about pressuring Senate Republicans to adopt the agreement. Finally, he collapsed from exhaustion. Shortly after, he suffered a major stroke. Although he recovered somewhat, he remained partly paralyzed. He rarely appeared in public again. Instead, Wilson communicated to Congress through his wife. When Republicans changed the treaty to deal with their concerns, Wilson told his supporters to reject it. In the end, the U.S. never did join the League of Nations. When a new president, Warren Harding, was sworn in 1921, Edith and Woodrow Wilson retired to a house in Washington, D.C. 3 years later, the former president died quietly there. Finally, at peace. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
and I'm Dan Novak.